are here today. Today is November 28th, 2015. My name is Matt, your host, and we're going to be here live for the next 58 minutes. And ladies and gentlemen, we got a lot going on this show, and I know you all had a whole bunch of Thanksgiving dinner, and you're probably sitting there in your easy chairs, you know, got a nice full belly of food and stuffing and gravy and all that. But so, well, that's going to be kind of good, actually. Just sit there and relax and enjoy the show, what we're going to talk about. Got a lot of things to go over. But first, once again, because we are on the holidays, I want to talk about our gun buying program now in effect at Aaron's Gun Shop. All guns at Aaron's Gun Shop Gallery of Gun page on my website, aaronsgunshop.com, will be at cost. That's correct. No matter the cost, you pay only wholesale shipping and the tax, plus the $30 handling charge per gun. So whether the gun is $200 or $2,000, all you pay is what it costs me, plus $30 handling per gun. Now is the time to buy for Christmas. Go to aaronsgunshop.com, click on the gallery gun page, and do a gun search for almost anything you're interested in. If it's there and in stock, you can purchase it online and pick it up at the Aaron's Gun Shop in Cameron. Now, the final balance, pay attention to this, the final balance must be paid in either cash or check. No credit or debit cards will be accepted for the final payment. So tell all your friends about this. Any gun on my gallery gun page is at cost, plus $30 handling per gun. Now's the time to buy, so hurry before the supplies of your favorite gun run out. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I want to also go over our highlights for the show here. We got a lot of things going on to get you briefed. You might want to get your pens and paper ready. But our CHL segment will cover the Senate Bill 112, Sections 418.003, Government Code, and Section 418.184. That will cover limitations in firearms. That will be interesting. I'm going to be reading a letter also from a news agency that I want you to listen to, and we're going to put it together with this section. Again, I've got three more stories from the American Rifleman's The Armed Citizens column. We'll read and glean what we can from those stories. And today on my PEP segment, Practice Eliminates Panic, I have a special guest, my son Dylan. Dylan plays a vital role in our training seminars and has much to tell about the do's and don'ts about looking for someone in your house. This is going to be fun, so you're going to want to take notes. My topic of interest segment is an interesting one to me, and it should be to you as well. I'm going to be reading many quotes that should disturb you. It should disturb you to action, so stand by for that one. And during my gun training demo, I will be discussing the dominant eye and the dominant hand and how to determine which eye and hand is the dominant one and why it's important to know what they are. My product spotlight will be another AR build from Blackjack Firearms made specifically for me. It's one of his earliest guns, so we're going to take a look at that, and I feel kind of honored that I get to have one of his very first guns. So I'll be showing that on video as well. And finally, if we have time, we'll do our WTF moment, WTF section, and go over some more pet peeves. And I'll tell you what, like I did last week, I'm going to go over 10 of mine before we go to the rest of the show here. And then at the later part of the show, on the bottom end, around 12, or I'm sorry, about 120, 125, we'll talk about some pet peeves if you want to give a call. But I'm going to give you some pet peeves. Here are the top 10 for this week. Number one, passing gas in a confined area. I'm sure you all can relate. Number two, dominating a conversation, otherwise known as ear rape. You ever been ear raped before? I have been many times, and it hurts. Number three, large avocado pits. I mean, you're spending a lot of money for an avocado. You would think the good Lord make the pit a little smaller, don't you think? Number five, chewing with your mouth open. Six, going slow in the fast lane. Number seven, not turning lights off when leaving a room. Okay, some people don't like that. I like to see where I'm going. Eight, in a hurry, paying for gas at the pump, but then having to go inside for the receipt. I hate that one. And yes, that one's mine. I'm like, okay, I'm in a rush. I got to go to the pump and get some gas. I'll go there and I'll put the credit card in there because I don't want to go in and wait in line. You do all that. You press the yes, I want the receipt button. And all of a sudden you hear that. It's out of paper. And so you got to go in. You got to wait in line. And then they look at you like you got two heads. So that's a pet peeve of mine. Number nine, not flushing the urinal or toilet after use. That's just disgusting, man. Are you that lazy where you can't flush the urinal or the toilet? And number 10, fishing for compliments. That person, oh, I'm such a terrible person, and you're waiting for that person. Oh, no, you're not. You're fishing for compliments. Well, there's no bait on that hook for me. Anyway, at the end of the show, we're going to go over some of those pet peeves that you have. The number here to reach me at the studio is 254-773-1400. 254-773-1400. That's right here at the KTM Studios. Or you can email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com or go directly to the website at aaronsgunshop.com. All right, let's go right into our CHL segment, ladies and gentlemen. You've got your pencil and paper ready, I'm sure. I'm going to be reading an article from the Daily Caller. This was written on August 24th, 2015. Let me read it. This is concerning Katrina. Headline, a decade later, remembering New Orleans, gun confiscation can and has happened in America. August 29th marks the 10th year anniversary of when Hurricane Katrina struck New Orleans, Louisiana. The memory of the devastation wrought by the storm and the resulting chaos is a human tragedy of such a vast scale that it endures to this day and will well beyond. Further, the measures taken to disarm law-abiding firearms owners in Katrina's wake should serve as a testament to why gun owners guard our right to bear arms so vigilantly. The disorder of the storm's aftermath and the inability of local law enforcement to contain it brought into stark realization the importance of the right to keep and bear arms in order to provide for the defense of oneself, loved ones, and community. Stories of looting and violence abounded. A police chief described post-Katrina New Orleans by stating, quote, it was like Mogadishu. Despite their inability to cope with the resulting mayhem, several days after the storm passed, New Orleans officials ordered the confiscation of lawfully owned firearms from city residents. In a September 8, 2005 article, the New York Times described the scene, stating, local police officers began confiscating weapons from civilians in the preparation for a forced evacuation of the last holdouts still living there. Police officers and federal law enforcement agents scoured the city carrying assault rifles, seeking residents who have holed up to avoid forcible eviction. As reported by the Washington Post, New Orleans Superintendent P. Edwin Compass made clear, quote, no one will be able to be armed, and guns will be taken. Only law enforcement will be allowed to have guns. At the time, NRA Executive Vice President Wayne LaPierre noted the nature of the seizures, stating, in many cases, it was from their homes at gunpoint. There were no receipts given or anything else at the time. When there was no 9/11 response, these citizens were out there on their own protecting their families. City authorities were selective with their order, discriminating against the most vulnerable. The Times noted that the city's order apparently does not apply to the hundreds of security guards whom businesses and some wealthy individuals have hired to protect their property. Mr. Compass said that he was aware of the private guards, but that the police had no plans to make them give up their weapons. In 2005, Ray Nagin, what a joke, that was my input there, as mayor of New Orleans, Nagin would go on to become a member of Michael Bloomberg's Mayor Against Illegal Guns, and later federal inmate number 32751-034 following a 2014 conviction of fraud and bribery. In the years that followed, New Orleans officials were unrepentant. In 2006 interview with a local radio station, WWL, New Orleans Superintendent Warren Riley said, during a circumstance like that, we cannot allow people to walk the street carrying guns, as law enforcement officers will confiscate the weapon if a person is walking down the street and they may be arrested. The NRA immediately denounced the confiscations as unlawful under state law and unconstitutional and set to work rectifying New Orleans' abuse of power and ensuring that no American would be faced with confiscation under a similar scenario. The city dragged its feet in returning confiscated firearms to the lawful owners. However, the NRA persisted until 2008 when the NRA and New Orleans came to a settlement in which the city agreed to carry out acceptable procedure for returning the firearms. Now, last two paragraphs here. Having gone through such a horrific ordeal, in the years after Katrina, New Orleans resident exhibited a greater appreciation for their right to bear arms. The number of right to carry permit holders in the city doubled from 2004 to 2006. In reporting the experience of Vivian Westerman, a 64-year-old that stayed in her home during Katrina, the Associated Press noted that, quote, so terrible was Katrina that Westerman wanted two things before the next hurricane season arrived, a backup source and a gun. Westerman told the AP that after purchasing a .38 revolver, I've never been more confident. In September 2008, when Hurricane Gustav threatened the city, the New York Post reported that those remaining in the city were locked and loaded and detailed the stories of several armed residents. As we remember the terrible devastation of Katrina, gun owners should further commit themselves to ensuring that Americans are never again deprived of the ability to defend themselves in their hour of need. A decade later, Wayne LaPierre's words following Katrina are still as relevant as ever. Quote, "The lesson of New Orleans is that citizens must be able to rely on their own ability to survive. The answer once and for all to all politicians who say Americans don't need the Second Amendment, government will protect you. The answer forevermore is New Orleans." Now, ladies and gentlemen, why did I read that article? Because we're going to come up to the CHL section that I teach in class. And it's concerning Senate Bill 112, and it amends Section 418.003 Government Code as follows. And we're going to read Section 418.003 Limitations. It reads, "This section does not, except as provided by Section 418.184, which I'll read in a second, authorize the seizure, or confiscation of any firearm or ammunition from an individual who is lawfully carrying or possessing the firearm or ammunition, or Section 418.184 firearms, a peace officer who is acting in the lawful execution of the officer's official duties during a state of disaster may disarm an individual if the officer reasonably believes that is immediately necessary for protection of the officer or another individual." I got no problems with that statement. "B, the peace officer shall return a firearm and any ammunition to an individual disarmed under the section we just read before ceasing to detain the individual, unless the officer, one, arrests the individual for engaging in criminal activity, or two, seizes the firearm as evidence in a criminal investigation." So, if you're not being arrested and that weapon's not being used for evidence, the officer must give it back to you. Now, if I'm a cop and I'm coming up to you and I'm a little jittery because everything's going crazy, I might ask you, "Hey, let's put that weapon over here for a minute and let's unload it. But before I leave, I'm going to give the thing back." And every law enforcement officer should read this, know it, understand it, and burn it into their brains. And every citizen should too. So when you meet each other in times of despair, you can say, "Hey, I'm protecting myself. You understand why, and we're good to go." So that's it. CHL segment. If you want to learn more, we got a class December 12th, 2:30. That's a Saturday. Go to my website, aaronsgunshop.com, sign up online, and we'll take care of you. If you have any questions, give us a call. Okay, moving right along into our NRA section. In this section, I'm going to read to you three stories from the NRA's Armed Citizens page of the American Rifleman. And hopefully from these true stories, we can learn what to do and what not to do, and maybe even get a laugh or two in the process. It depends on the story. And once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you're not a member of the NRA, doesn't matter what you think about it, they do a great service to us with the numbers. If everybody signs up, they have more numbers to keep down bad legislation. So become a member of the NRA if you aren't already. So let's start with this. Story number one. I got my notes mixed up here. Story number one. This is from January 2015. Lisa Ring saw a 32-year-old man on her property and asked him to leave. But he displayed a knife in his waistband and explained that he had a right to be there because his sister was lord of the estate. Ring called for her husband, Paul, who came to her side with his shotgun. The suspect threw the knife through the screen door, narrowly missing the Rings. Rings fired his gun, hitting the man in the arm. The assailant ran off but was placed in custody a short time later. The Rings were unharmed. Now, my commentary. Number one. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, don't bring a knife to a gunfight. That's just stupid. Don't bring a knife to a gunfight. Two, if you realize you brought a knife to a gunfight and still decide to use it, well then, you deserve what you get. Three, last week I was embarrassed to be a man because of last week's story, being where the woman's always backing up the guy. Well, here we have stories of guys. But today, Paul Ring shows us how to be a man, at the ready to defend his wife with a gun in hand. So, due to that situation, kudos to you, buddy. Number two, story number two, and this is also from January 2015. Joshua Nelson was shopping at a Walmart with his wife and children when he heard a woman scream, "Stop! Put it down!" After telling his family to run for the front of the store and call the police, Nelson located the frantic woman. Nelson, who has a concealed carry permit and carries his firearm almost everywhere, spotted a man holding a large fillet knife to the woman's abdomen. Nelson let the knife-wielding man know that he was armed, then demanded that he drop the knife. The attacker then turned the knife on himself and threatened suicide. Nelson continued to talk to the man, who finally complied with the orders to drop the knife and kick it away. Police arrived soon thereafter, and the gentleman said, "I immediately felt responsible for that lady's life," Nelson said of the incident. "If I'm in a position to help somebody and I don't, I would feel just as bad as the guy who does wrong." No injuries reported. Here's my commentary. Number one, Joshua Nelson didn't panic. He sent his family immediately to safety. Very good. Number two, Nelson used his command voice and nonviolent dispute resolution techniques to defuse the situation. He must have taken my class. Three, he used defense of a third person to justify his action. And number four, excellent job, Mr. Nelson. Let's go to number three here, story number three. This is again from January 2015. A 25-year-old man was in his car with his girlfriend when two strangers approached and asked to use his cigarette lighter. When handed the lighter, one suspect pulled out a handgun and demanded the couple's possessions. The driver, who has a concealed carry permit, retrieved his own handgun and pointed at the suspects. Both fled the scenes. The responding officers found the suspects hiding behind a nearby restaurant, one still in possession of the lighter. The handgun used in the robbery attempt was never recovered. My commentary. Number one, I believe the man was totally aware of the situation and, being protective of himself and his girlfriend, already had the gun handy just in case. That's my thoughts. Two, his preparedness made him able to draw his handgun quickly to end the threat. And three, once again, that most criminals are stupid. The suspect still had the lighter. So there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Three stories from the NRA's American Rifleman, just going over what we can learn and glean from those situations. Okay, what we're going to do now is take a one-minute break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking. We're going to be going over our PEP section, Preparedness Eliminates Panic, with my son, Dylan, and we're going to be going over some neat things, and we'll go over some upcoming events as well. So we'll see you on the other side.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Bitros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. aaronsgunshop.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. It's November 28th. We're live here. And we're going to be starting our PEP section, Preparedness Eliminates Panic. But before I do that, I want to go over some upcoming events that are going to be happening at Aaron's Gun Shop. A CHL class, December 12th at 2:30 in Cameron. Seats are still available. Course cost is $60. All you need is your driver's license, gun that you want to shoot, as long as it's a 32 caliber or larger, 50 rounds, and $60 for the course, and a willingness to learn. We have an updated special on our calendars. They are now three packs for $25 a pack. These are pretty cool. Go to my website, aaronsgunshop.com, to go to the radio page, and you'll see them there. And you can buy three packs. Give them to your favorite liberals. They'll just love it. Get them now while they last. Go to aaronsgunshop.com, the radio page. And there's beautiful ladies elegantly showing beautiful guns in an open carry style way. Don't forget Aaron's holiday gun special, buy specials going on at aaronsgunshop.com, at my gallery gun page, aaronsgunshop.com. At the gun site, you can buy guns at cost plus a $30 handling charge. So $200 or $2,000, all you pay is a $30 handling charge plus the cost of the gun. So hurry while supplies of your favorite guns are still available. I got a little tongue-tied there. On December 13th, this is a big one. This is probably going to be the last one I do for the year. On December 13th, that's a Sunday, I will be doing this year's final home invasion and self-defense seminar. The class fee is $165. And as a Christmas special, all students of mine who have taken my CHL class can take $60 off this price. Just show me that you've taken my class. I've done too many. I can't remember everybody. So sign up quickly. There's limited seating. I'll tell you what, I'll read all about that in just a second. I want to talk about this one final promotion, and then we'll talk about that seminar, and then we'll bring my son on. We've got the Man of the Year promotion. Aaron's Gun Shop would like to help you celebrate the true man in your life. We've got a whole bunch of people sending in stuff, so if you want to get yours in, send it in soon. Whether it be a husband, father, grandfather, uncle, or just the best guy in your life, write a short letter between 50 to 100 words and tell us about your favorite man. No, I'm sorry, Dylan. You can't write one about me. I'm not eligible. Okay. The winner will be announced on December 19th, 2015. All entries should be sent to pmerrick@aaronsgunshop.com. I don't know if there's a problem with that email. If so, just send it to aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and I'll forward it. Winners will receive a patriotic poster, an Aaron's Gun Shop calendar, and a trophy. Listed below are the characteristics you may use in selecting your subject and writing your letter. Honor, doing the right thing for the right reason. Through living honorably, a man earns the trust of those around him. Courage, when life gets tough, he keeps looking up. All people experience fear and doubt. The courageous overcome this experience through personal will and what the old timers call backbone. And selflessness, putting others above himself. Selflessness is not a natural condition of man. Selflessness is overcome by putting trust and faith in a higher power. Sacrifice, willing to give the ultimate for his family. A man willingly offers his time and talents for the betterment of his family. Now, you can go to aaronsgunshop.com, go to the radio page, and there's going to be a section there listed on the Man of the Year promotion. So really, we've got a lot of people sending it in. Doesn't take much to do. Send an email, 50 to 100 words, and let us know, and we will see who wins. Okay, this other one now, the December 13th seminar, it's the Aaron's High Cap Adventures Home and Self-Defense Training Seminar. And in this seminar on the 13th, we're going to be going over the following. Mindset and philosophy, gun safety and handling, reloads, empties and tactical reloads, weak hand reloads, point shooting, drawing from concealment, handgun round robins. Ladies and gentlemen, the handgun round robin is incredible. That's one of the best elements to teach you how to use guns. Weak hand shooting, room clearing, law enforcement aspects before and after the shot, student scenarios, live fire shooting drills. That'll get your confidence up. We'll touch on knives, lights, and lasers, hand and arm signals. Yes, you do use them when communicating. And special equipment, the nice to have. So once again, December 13th, that's a Sunday, starts at 8 o'clock in the morning, gets over at 6. Lunch is included, barbecue lunch. And so now with that, what I want to do in this pep section is bring onto the screen here and introduce to you my son, Dylan Beatros. Dylan, come on over here to the mic, buddy. Say hi to everybody. Say hi in French. My son is going to Southwestern University, and he's learning languages. And what is it? French is the major one, right?
It is, yeah.
Tell me something in French.
Okay. Bonjour, tout le passant. Je suis très content d'être ici.
And what did you just say?
I said, hello, everyone. It's nice to be here.
Well, great. I'm sure everybody's saying hello to you back. Dylan, the reason I got you on here today, Dylan is an actor. He's also got his IMDb page. If you want to go there, Dylan Beatros, check him out. He's doing quite nicely. Maybe he'll even send you a signed autographed photo. I don't know. But the reason I've got him on here today is because Dylan is my acting crackhead when it comes to our training seminars. Okay, he's not a crackhead, everybody. He acts as though he's a crackhead. And what it is, when we do our room-to-room search in our shoot house, the scenario is basically that the parent or parents are asleep in the master bedroom and somebody breaks in, which happens to be my son crackhead here acting as like a crackhead trying to steal a TV so he can buy more drugs. And so the people of the household wake up, they hear it, and they're going to room search because they got children on the other side of the house and they got to protect their children. And in the course of this, Dylan's been doing this for quite a long time. He has come to realize people have patterns, a natural set patterns of doing things that are not good. And so we're going to get him on here now and talk to him, and I'm going to ask him some questions. So Dylan, first, as my crackhead in my seminars, tell me just an overall, what do you think of the program? And then we'll get into the details.
Well, first of all, I really love the program just because you can talk about home invasion in theory, but as soon as you get out there, every concept that you thought you were going to follow just goes right through the window. Like, you are a completely different person than how you were talking about yourself inside the classroom. Like, I've had people that were super confident, and then they get into the seminar, and they're just a mess. They're heavy breathing, they're stomping, they're like, you know, it's all self-confidence just flies out the window when their adrenaline is pumping. So.
Yeah, he makes a comment there, and I teach this all the time, and that is, you know, you're shooting at a piece of paper, the worst thing that can happen to you is get a paper cut. But when you're put under stress, that adrenaline's pumping through your system, are you going to be able to manipulate your 10 fingers? Because they end up having to turn into like 3 fingers. And so trying to manipulate a gun with 3 fingers as compared to 10 fingers makes it a little bit difficult. So Dylan, you've done this a bunch of times. I've taught tons of students, and you're absolutely right. We see the same scenario in the classroom. You know, they've got it. They're a little nervous, but they think they got it. But once they get into the shoot house, and ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you something. We're using airsoft guns, replicas of real guns that shoot plastic BBs at a high enough velocity where it's not going to penetrate you, but it's going to, like, oh, that's smarts. So when you're turning the corner, you're going to think twice before you do it because you don't want to get stung by this thing. But Dylan, what have you learned? You wrote a list here for me. I'm going to take it one by one. But as you're going through the house and the adrenaline's pumping, there's things that everybody seems to be doing that gives themselves away. Why don't you tell us about that?
Okay, so the first one is definitely shadows. I know, I like to say I'm hiding in one of the back rooms and someone's trying to cut a corner. Well, the simulation house that we use has a bunch of windows, so light's constantly coming through the windows and it's illuminating the area. And let's say a person's trying to cut a corner, and then there's this hulking shadow that's preceding them. And so I have three choices. I could either leave, wait for them to turn around, spray them with bullets, or I could just shoot them straight through the wall. And so it really gives them away. A lot of people are not conscious of the way, like, what's on the ground or what else they're doing. The involuntary things that they're doing that gives them away.
Shadows is a big one. It really is. Now, if you're thinking it's nighttime out and there's no shadows, that's not true. You got maybe the coffee brewer's on and you got that little green LED light, or you've got some other type of LED lights, or you got the hallway light that's down there in the socket that's illuminating your walkway. There's shadows that can be cast, so you got to watch for those too. Okay, what about you got down here heavy breathing? Tell us about the heavy breathing.
Oh, my gosh. So, this one, I'll give a specific scenario. This one lady was doing extremely, extremely well. Like, she was tiptoeing really quietly. I couldn't hear her. And then all of a sudden, I hear this. Well, okay, there she is. So she was coming down the hallway. So I just maneuvered around. And while she was hyperventilating, I just came out and popped her. So it really gives you away. Just you're breathing. People aren't conscious of the fact that.
Well, let's talk about that. When you're going through it, I know when I'm going through it, mm-hmm. I've got to watch my breathing because I know that can be a giveaway. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, when you're controlling your breathing in a hyper situation, your body's craving more oxygen. And so you're trying to stall the oxygen because you don't want the gasping to take effect. And all of a sudden it gets to the point where I got to breathe, man. I got to breathe. And then that moment is when you get snagged. So you've got to learn to control your breathing and be as calm as you can. Very good. Your next one on the list here is stomping.
Some people, it seems like when they come into the shootout house, it's like they have lead shoes. They will just slam their feet down on the ground, and it literally is like sonar. I know exactly where you are the entire time, and it makes it really easy for me. So if you want the crackhead in your house to have a really easy time, take all your stuff and shoot you, stomp your feet. I know some people were actually smart. They took off their shoes, and that way, like, when they were in their socks, I couldn't hear them. But those that had, like, some people had boots on, some people had sneakers on, and they would just stomp around, so I knew exactly where they were every step of the way.
And the shoot house also, it's not 100% replicated like a real house where it's got carpeting, wood floors, and all that. There's dirt in there. It's on a concrete floor. And so when they're turning corners or moving, you can actually hear the gritness mm-hmm. between their foot and the floor, right?
Yeah.
So you have to, when you first walk in there and you realize, hey, that my feet are making noise, now you got to start walking flat foot, not bending your feet. So that's another thing that's taking away oxygen from your body. It's great, though, because you don't want to get shot. Rubbing their pants legs together.
This is honestly essentially like the stomping. Like, let's say, you know how when you wear jeans and you're like, your legs are really close together and it makes that sound when the material runs together?
Yeah.
A lot of people aren't conscious of that because, like, you know, like, let's say you're going hunting, and like one of the big things to keep in mind when you're hunting is to keep your legs further apart. That way your pants legs aren't rubbing together and not making a lot of noise. That's kind of how it is in the shootout house. I hear a lot of people that I'll just hear this jean friction sound, and I know exactly where they are. It's just like the stomping. It's like sonar.
Dylan has become like a ninja. I mean, he's just very quick, light on his feet, and because he knows these patterns, he just takes people out real fast, which is a great thing because we're always trying to find your weak spot and enhance the areas that you're weak at. Okay, this one's very important, as they all are, but I say that because I actually teach this in the class, and that is how to turn corners. There's proper ways to turn a corner in a house if you think that there's somebody in there, so you don't get compromised. So tell us about poorly cutting corners.
One of the things you're supposed to do when you're cutting corners is to keep as close enough to the wall, if I'm not mistaken, and that way you're a smaller target and you can't be hit. I know a lot of people, when they cut their corners, some people will stick their hand out with their gun, kind of like clear the area, and they'll fire off a round or something. Or some people would like stick a foot out first and then like clear the corner like they were glued to the wall.
Let me clarify what he's saying when he stick close to the wall. If you're going down a hallway and you're going to turn to the right, I don't want to stay on the right wall. I want to stay far away from that wall and stay closer to the left wall. I want to stay as far away from the turning corner as possible, like he's saying, because if I'm hugging the wall turning the corner, there's no room for error. They're going to see immediately me turning that corner. But if I'm at a distance from where I turn and closer to the far wall, I will probably see them first before they see me. That's called cutting the pie. But we'll talk about that in the seminar on December 13th, and you can come to. So, Dylan, if they're turning the corner, they got their hat on, and they're real close to that wall, that you can see the brim of their hat, mm-hmm. or their foot, or the barrel. And if somebody, like the bad guy like you, if you wanted to, and we don't allow this, but you could if you wanted to, as the gun barrel is coming out, you grab the barrel and take the gun away from somebody, right?
I could, yeah.
Okay. Opening, closing doors loudly. I mean, that's just an obvious one. I don't understand that.
Yeah, well, like, there's not that many doors in the shootout house, but they find a way to just slam them every single time. Like, some people, when they will enter the house, instead of, like, opening the door, they'll kick it open. I guess theatrics. I guess they just want to have fun.
They see it on TV, too.
I mean, you do you, but I just know that I know exactly where you are. And I know when you're entering, I know when you're leaving, and, like, some doors creak really loudly. So if you're not careful with what you're opening and what you're doing, I'll know which entry point you're at, and I can find you.
That's right. This one here bothers me. This really does. Because I train to keep your finger off the trigger. I get guns that replicate real guns. Let's say we got an airsoft gun that's a Glock 17. I will only put 17 pellets in the gun. If I've got a 1911, I'll only put 7 pellets in the gun. It'll replicate because the mechanical workings of the gun is the same, so you can interchange mags. But the last one you have here is firing off a round when entering each room.
Yep, that happens.
I mean, think about that, ladies and gentlemen. You're in a subdivision firing a round into each room before you enter it.
I'll give one instance. This person, were doing three of the other ones. Like, they were really breathing heavily. They were stomping. Their pants were rubbing together. So I knew where they are to begin with. But every time that they would cut a room, they'd fire off a round. Every single time. So, like, let's say that bullet goes through the wall, hits your kid or your dog on the other side. It flies through your house and into your neighbor's house and hits your neighbor in the leg or something. It's just, not only do I know where you are, you're going to be out of bullets by the time I get to you. Like, that actually happened. This person had completely run out of ammunition, and so I was pretty much chasing them around, like, the hunt, in a sense. Like,
now, tell me something. You know that pellet, how it feels.
Ow.
Okay? And you know when you're turning the corner, even if you're the aggressor and you're turning the corner, mm-hmm. you know there's a chance if the person outdoes me, he's going to shoot me. So doesn't it make you think twice before you turn that corner and make you think of all the training that you got so that you can engage that turn with much more professionalism than just going out there and putting your neck in a noose?
Absolutely. Like, the concept of danger makes everything real. Like, if there's no possibility of me getting hurt, I won't care because there's no threat to me. But, like, I've been hit by those suckers in the throat, and that hurts. And so I know that I don't want to get hit by one of those things. So
now, let me make something clear, too, ladies and gentlemen. You're all wearing protective gear. This is just every now and then because he's in there all the time, and he's getting shot at by 15 people at a time sometimes. Sooner or later, one sneaks in a weak spot. But you, when you're in the shoot house, you're all protected up. You feel the impact, but you don't feel the sting. So it's a good deal. But if you really want to learn and see how you do under stress, this is the place to go and the training to take. It's aaronsgunshop.com. Go to the High Cap Adventure page. You'll see the flyers there. December 13th is the last seminar for this year. So you might want to call up, sign up, whatever, but it's going to fill up quick. So give us a call if you want. Now, Dylan, do you have any parting words before we take a break?
Just, but my main thing is, like, in the class, we go through all of these techniques. My dad will teach, like, all the do's and don'ts before entering that shootout house. The problem is, when the adrenaline is pumping, a lot of people throw those things out the window. The most important part of it is to stay calm and remember everything you've been taught. That way you can perform adequately.
And the way you perform that even better is by practice, 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 right? Mm-hmm. You gotta continue it up. The better you are prepared, the more that training will come to save you when a situation really happens. So, Dylan, thank you for coming on. Thank you for sharing. I'm sure a lot of people got a lot out of that. Paul, we're going to be taking a break for another minute here. When we come back on the other side, I'm going to go over my topic of interest section. We're going to be talking about a lot of quotes from famous people that may get you to action. So we'll see you on the other side.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Beatros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. aaronsgunshop.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. I'm Matt, your host. Today is the 28th of November, 2015, and again, we are still alive, fortunately. We are in our topic of interest section, and I wanted to, I wrote some notes here. I'm just going to read off my notes, tell you how I'm thinking. I am the way I am because of things that have happened in my life. Whether it may be by word or action, our lives get affected, and as a result, we become who we are. Some time ago during my Bible studies, I was looking for clues as to who or where from the Antichrist would come. Somehow or another, I felt it would be someone of Rome. Well, in my quest to gather information, I Google searched whatever I could think of concerning Rome, Antichrist, etc., etc. Then one day I came across the Club of Rome. I said, wait, maybe it's not a person but an organization. So I read about the Club of Rome and realized that there is indeed groups of people who wish to bring this country down. One thing led to another and names started to appear that I'm sure all of us would recognize. So why am I saying all this to you? Because through my studies, many people in power have been trying to tell us of the destructive forces against our great country. These people are patriots, yet their cries of awareness have been falling on a lot of deaf ears. So I'm going to read quotes from people who most of us know in the hopes that it will spur curiosity and an awakening of the mind and the true patriotic spirit that has made this country great. Now, when I read these quotes, it's like I'm going down a rabbit hole. I want to see how far it goes. So if you join me, you'll see where it goes. And to be honest, you're probably not going to like it. And all I'm going to do is read the quotes and tell you who said them. Hopefully, you will become a detective and study the rest yourself. So here we go, okay? Now, I'm just going to read quotes. Some of them are going to be protective of our country. Some are going to be, they don't care about our country. But I'm just going to read. I've got a book here that I'm reading a whole bunch of quotes from, and we'll spend maybe, I don't know, 5 minutes doing this. All right, the first one. Give me control. Be honest with you, a lot of these have to do with the Federal Reserve, too. Give me control over a nation's currency, and I care not who makes its laws. And that's from Baron M.A. Rothschild. And a lot of you know who that is. And if you don't, look it up. Whoever controls the volume of money in any country is master of all its legislation and commerce. Now, that's from President James Garfield. You'd think he'd know a thing or two, right? We the people are the rightful masters of both Congress and the courts, not to overthrow the Constitution, but to overthrow the men who pervert the Constitution. Abraham Lincoln. That's an oldie but a goodie, right? All right, as I flip the pages here, I'm going to read from the 75th Congressional Record. Chairman Lewis T. McFadden of the House Banking and Currency Committee addressed the House on June 10, 1932. Remember now, the Federal Reserve was in 1913. I believe the act was signed in 1913. Some people think that the Federal Reserve banks are a government institution. They are not government institutions. They are private credit monopolies which prey upon the people of the U.S. for the benefit of themselves and their foreign and domestic swindlers and rich and predatory moneylenders. This is not some tinfoiled hat person speaking. This is a person in Congress. Let's talk about President Andrew Jackson here. If Congress has the right under the Constitution to issue paper money, it was given them to be used by themselves, not to be delegated to individuals or to a corporation. Abraham Lincoln also said, "The privilege of creating and issuing money is not only the supreme prerogative of government, but it's the government's biggest creative opportunity. By the adoption of these principles, the taxpayer will be saved immense sums of interest." Let's read again from a congressional record. This one's from 1846, just to tell you, because they've been trying to do Federal Reserve for quite a while, two or three times. "A disordered currency is one of the greatest political evils. It undermines the virtue necessary for the support of the social system and encourages propensities destructive to its happiness. It wars against industry, frugality, and economy, and it fosters evil spirits of extravagance and speculation. Of all the contrivances for cheating the laboring classes of mankind, none has been more effectual than that which deludes them with paper money." As we read on, I saw one from Charles A. Lindbergh Sr. You all know who Charles A. Lindbergh Sr. is. And this was at the time of the passage of the Federal Reserve Act of 1913. He says, "This act establishes the most gigantic trust on earth. When the president signs the act," that's Woodrow Wilson, I believe, the invisible government by the money power, proven to exist by the money trust investigation, will be legalized. The new law will create inflation whenever the trust wants inflation. From now on, depressions will be scientifically created." Interesting. We move on. I was reading one here. The Constitution, Article 1-8. "The Congress shall have power to coin money, regulate the value thereof, and of foreign coin, and fix the standard of weights and measures. No state shall coin money, emit bills of credit, make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debts." Well, I don't think we're doing that, are we? Let's recall the words of Thomas Jefferson. "Single acts of tyranny may be ascribed to the accidental opinion of a day, but a series of oppressions begun at the distinguished period and pursued unalterably through the every change of ministers too plainly proves a deliberate systematic plan of reducing us to slavery." These guys know what it's all about. They're writing about it and they're telling us. And so here we are, we just keep on doing the wrong thing, putting our country in a terrible position, and all these people of the past of prominence have told us, hey, look what's happening. I'm going to read some other quotes here. "To sin by silence when they should protest makes cowards of men," Abraham Lincoln. This is from the Supreme Court. "It is not the function of our government to keep the citizen from falling into error. It is the function of the citizens to keep the government from falling into error." Again from Abraham Lincoln. "If we do not make common cause to save the good old ship of the Union on this voyage, nobody will have a chance to pilot her on another voyage. It's our duty, everybody. We've got to protect what we have." George Washington, one of my favorites, and we'll probably end up with this one or our next one. Listen to the words of this. "Against the insidious wiles of foreign influence, the jealousy of a free people ought to be constantly awake, since history and experience prove that foreign influence is one of the most baneful woes of republican government." And James Madison will close up with this. "I believe there are more instances of abridgment of freedom of the people by gradual and silent encroachments of those in power than by violent and sudden usurpations. I read those, ladies and gentlemen. Hopefully you say, I know that guy. He said what? Really? Let me check that out. That's what I'm hoping you do. I hope you get called to action. Look it up. Become informed. Become informed citizens. Remember, I always talk about being informed, being ignorant, or being an idiot. I don't want to deal with an idiot. Ignorance, there's hope. You just don't know. We'll teach you. But if you're informed and you're just sitting on the couch doing nothing, well, then you're just as bad. We need informed individuals who get up and do something. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. We're going to take another break, and when we come back, we're going to be doing some product demos and some gun demos, and hopefully if we got time, we'll do a WTF moment as well. See you on the other side.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Bitros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. aaronsgunshop.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. We are back now doing our product demo section. As you can see in the video here, which you'll probably see hopefully Sunday or Monday sometime, we're going to be talking about Blackjack Firearms, a Model R1. This is one of his older ones. John Ferguson from Blackjack Firearms, I asked him to make me a gun a long time ago, and this is one of his early ones, so I feel kind of honored to have this one. I got special markings on here, too. But what we're going to be going over on this product demo, I want to show this rifle because I had it made so it could carry a bayonet. People are saying bayonets are dead. Well, I don't think so. I'd rather stick somebody than beat them with a stick. Okay, so if my gun's out of ammunition, instead of me beating them, I'm going to poke them with the end of my blade. But there's problems out there because the military bayonet was made for a military rifle. So when a military rifle can be a little bit shorter than a civilian one. A civilian one has a 16-inch barrel. A military one, I believe, is a 14.5-inch barrel, and it's designed to carry the bayonet. And I've been reading a whole bunch of things and talking to people, and they say their bayonets don't fit or work. So we're going to talk about that. The first thing here, though, is let me describe this gun from John. He had it made for me. What's the first thing we do when we get a weapon, everybody? We check to make sure it's not loaded. So we're going to take the mag out of this gun and check. It's clear. I'm going to pull the bolt to the rear and check the chamber. And it's clear, and the weapon now is on safe. So the weapon is clear. And what I'm showing you, I'll give you a brief description of this gun. I made it, I had John make it for me with a 14.5-inch barrel instead of the standard 16 for us civilians, I guess. And then we had a flash hider put on it, a little different flash hider. I had a quad rail put on it with my bridge that goes across here because I like one long Picatinny rail all the way from front to back. I had John put on a saw grip. I personally like the saw grip. It fits my hand. The angle's right. And this one, this particular one's made from Tapco. It's not a Magpul or anything, but it's just a Tapco saw grip. And we've got a little angled foregrip going on in the front here underneath the quad rail for a little bit more convenient grip so your wrist isn't torqued out. It kind of makes your wrist go in a more natural position. And then we have here a sling swivel adapter on the side so you can carry it across your chest with no problem. It's got a fixed front sight post, and we attached on here a military flip-up rear sight. So in case I do put an optic on here, I'll be able to co-witness like we've talked about so many other times before. And basically, other than that, it's a standard rifle with a bayonet lug. But now, let's talk about this. Because I wanted John to build this for me so I could put a bayonet on it, I brought with me a bayonet. And I want to show it to you all, if you're interested in getting a bayonet to put on your rifle, what you may have to do to make it fit. I had an argument with somebody one time, and they said, no, you can fit this bayonet on anything. Well, it's true, you can fit it on there, but it's not going to fit the way it's supposed to fit. And here's what's going on. When you look at this rifle here, and you see the bayonet lug underneath the front sight post, for those of you just listening, if you have an image of an M16 with the front sight post, got the triangular front sight, and right underneath is the bayonet lug. And then above that, right towards the muzzle of the gun, we have the flash hider. But now on the flash hider, they have a flat spot on either side, and that's where the wrench goes to torque it on. if you keep that in mind with what I'm about to show you now, I've got a, well, this one's a particular, this is a Chinese copy of one. I just did it for a quick reference. But here's the bayonet that the military uses. And there's the barrel ring. This is the ring that goes over the barrel. Now, if you have a 16-inch barrel and you go to lock it on your bayonet lug, what's going to happen is the barrel ring is going to be behind the flash hider, literally resting on the barrel, and it's going to rattle. And the blade sticking out from the end of the barrel is only going to be like maybe 3 inches, whereas it should be sticking out a good 6-7 inches. So what happens is the barrel length makes a very, it's very important when it comes to relationship with the front sight. So let me clarify. On my particular gun with the 14.5-inch barrel, when I go to put a standard bayonet on it, from the flat side of the flash hider to the bayonet lug is approximately 5 inches. The handle on my bayonet is approximately 5 inches. So the barrel ring is going to go over the barrel of the gun, barrel of the flash hider, okay? And it's going to lock into the bayonet lug underneath the front sight, and it locks into place. And if you can see that on the video, you're going to see the barrel ring is on the flats of the flash hider. The locking mechanism is on the bayonet lug, and the bayonet blade itself sticks out quite far. That's the way it's supposed to be. It doesn't rattle. It's on firm. Works great. If this was a 16-inch barrel, it would kind of look like this, if I can make it work, which I can't. It's too, it works too good on this gun. What's going to happen is this barrel ring is going to come down here, and it's going to wobble because the barrel is a smaller diameter than the barrel ring on the bayonet. The barrel ring on the bayonet fits perfectly on the flash hider, so it's stable, it doesn't rattle, and it fits perfectly with the length of blade being maximized on your gun. Anything else is too short. So in reality, it doesn't matter if you've got a AR pistol, if you've got a 20-inch barrel, if you've got a 14-inch barrel, 16-inch barrel. The key thing is that the flat of the flash hider is approximately 5 inches from the bayonet lug. Doesn't matter everything else, as long as those, that distance between those two points is about 5 inches, you're going to have a stable bayonet on your gun, okay? So I thought that was pretty neat. I wanted to bring it in and talk about it and show it. If you'd hold that for me, sir, we'll be good. So if you have any questions, go to Blackjack Firearms, bjfirearms.biz, check it out. It's like I said, it's a restaurant. They got all sorts of things on their menu. You can pick whatever you want. Have a great time upgrading or having John or Steven build a gun specifically for you. It's a great place to go. Check it out. So with that, that's our product demo from Blackjack Firearms. We're talking about the 14.5-inch barrel and the bayonet lug. Okay, I want to go over our gun training demo, and I wanted to talk about determining the dominant eye and your dominant hand. Since I'm a left-handed shooter, I'm going to describe it with me. Everything I say, just do it in the opposite. If I'm shooting a handgun, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to want to shoot it with my dominant hand. Now, if my dominant hand gets injured and I can't use it, of course, proper training, you want to use your weak hand. But right now, we're just talking about dominance. So since I'm a left-handed shooter, I'm going to pick up this training pistol in my left hand and hold it properly. The trick is, when I go to aim it, will my left eye be the dominant eye? If my left eye is not the dominant eye and my right eye ends up being the dominant eye, I've got cross-eyed dominance, which is not good. So before we go any further, I want everybody to take this test. Let's confirm if you're either a right-handed, if you're a right-handed shooter, let's see if you got a right dominant eye. If you're a left-hand shooter, let's see if you got a left dominant eye. And the way we're going to do this is as follows. Look at something. Find something away from you. Then put your two hands out in front of you with your palms facing away from you, and put them overlapping, and then open them up just a little bit so there's a little peephole between your hands. I want you to look through that tiny little hole with both of your eyes open, and look at the object I just, you know, you just found. You're looking at the object with both eyes open, looking between your hands through that tiny little hole. Keep your both eyes open. Now bring your hands to your face with both eyes open. Your hands are going to move automatically to your dominant eye. Once the backs of your hands reach your face, then close one eye at a time. If you're a left-handed shooter, your left eye is the one that should be looking through the hole. If you're a left-handed shooter and your right eye is the one that's looking through the hole, you're a cross-eyed dominant individual, and we can fix that. Not a problem. If you're a right-handed shooter and your left eye is looking through it, you're cross-eyed dominant. But if you're a left-handed shooter and your left eye looks through the hole, if you're a right-handed shooter and your right eye looks through the hole, you're okay, no problem. Now, for purposes of self-defense shooting, the reason cross-eyed dominance really isn't an issue, if you're shooting 21 feet or less, in my opinion, you should be shooting with both eyes open. It's a quicker way to shoot, and depending on how your grip is, which you can learn from me at our class on December 13th, go to aaronsgunshop.com and sign up. But we're going to teach all that. We're going to teach the proper grip on how to hold a gun. We're going to understand what our dominant eye is and our dominant hand. Now, if you're watching the video, if I've got a dominant right eye, but I got the gun in my dominant left hand, I'm going to either have to move my head over to take the shot and aim, or I've got to bring the gun over into my line of sight. That's not good. Takes too much time. It's too awkward, especially if you're marksmanship shooting. But when it comes to self-defense shooting, you're going to look with both eyes open, the gun comes up, cross-eyed dominance no longer has an effect on you. Because shooting with both eyes open, you see twice as much and you can shoot twice as fast. So, that's the trick. Both hands together, little hole in the middle there, look with both eyes open, bring your hands to your face. Depending on which eye is looking through the hole, will determine your dominant eye. If you would like more information on that and how to become a better pistol shooter, sign up for one of our classes. We've got the CHL class on the 12th, and we've got the seminar on the 13th, which is a great thing to do. Is if you take my class on the 12th, I will discount your class on the 13th by $60. So basically, you're going to get two courses for the price of $105 if you do it that way. All right, so anyway, we're going to move on. That's the gun demo on cross-eyed dominant eye and dominant hand. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to go into our WTF section. If you've got your pet peeves, you can call in now. But I'm going to read what I think here is a pretty positive WTF. And I looked at this article and I saw it and I was going to read it here. It says, North Texas schools preach fighting back against intruders. This is in Fort Worth. A handful of North Texas school districts are training teachers to respond to armed intruders, not immediately drop and hide. Woohoo! In Fort Worth, more than 120 officers trained over the summer on how to assist school districts interested in strategy sometimes known as avoid, deny, defend. According to the Fort Worth newspaper, the three steps call on teachers to help students flee to safety, then deny a possible intruder access to the classroom, then defend themselves if an intruder enters. Fort Worth officer Stephanie Warren told the newspaper, "We want them to defend themselves and fight like their lives depended on it." Ladies and gentlemen, I've been teaching that from day one. Okay? Sure, if you can lead the situation, be aware of your surroundings. Acknowledge there's a threat, be aware of your surroundings, and avoid it if at all possible. If you can't avoid it, you know, you do what you got to do to defend yourself. But the more you train, the more you practice, the more proficient you are with your mind, your weapons, your body in defense, you know, unarmed defensive tactics, the better you will respond to a situation. So once again, we teach these kind of things in our seminars and our classes. If you're interested, go to aaronsgunshop.com, give us a call, sign up on the website, but whatever, get a class, get some training, become proficient so that when you're on the street and God forbid if something happens, you'll be better off and better able to defend yourself. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we're winding down here. We got about another minute left here, so we're going to end it like this. We're going to tell everybody to just have great holidays. Have a Merry Christmas. If I don't get to say it in the future, I'm going to start saying it now. Have a Merry Christmas. Be safe out there. Keep your powder dry. And to each and every one of you, God bless. And we'll see you next week.